welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everyone. Glad you guys are with us today. Going to have a lot of fun. We're going to talk a little bit about what to do when you're having a tough bite fishing. And talk about a report coming out of Iowa that should have people inspired. That and more when we return with more Valley Outdoors. Here's your chance to fish with us, the Valley Outdoors. It's simple to do. Register online at thevalleyoutdoors.com and wait for your name to be drawn. We're giving away a trip to four individuals that includes lodging in Ashkenham Resort in Ash River and fishing the waters of Cabotogama and Namekin Lakes. Join Don and I on this fabulous fishing trip September 17th through the 22nd. You can bring your own boat or fish with one of us, plus a walleye seminar and contests for prizes throughout the trip. Just register today at thevalleyoutdoors.com. Trip sponsored by The Valley Outdoors Radio and Ashkenham Resort. Get registered today to fish with us. Winner announced on August 20th on The Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Complete promotional rules available at thevalleyoutdoors.com. Welcome back, everybody. Don?
Yeah, good to be here.
Ava?
I'm here.
Thanks for doing what you do, Ava.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks for doing what
you do. Pushing buttons and turning us off when we don't say the right things.
Yeah.
Stop, start, redo.
She's got the whip.
Well, Don, I went out fishing this weekend.
About
this
time.
Last weekend. I know. Yeah. Well, I got my boat, so.
Oh.
Got the brand new Vexus.
You had to get it wet right away.
Yeah. You kidding? It was.
So how'd it work out for
you? It was awesome. Very nice. I happen to have the brand new DVX-20S, the Vexus, with the new design without the boxes. They have storage in the floor, jump seats, and a casting platform in the back, and the same hull. So you have that wave crushing hull, splitting hull. So it's just.
How fast did you go?
This is a demo. It's only got a 250 Pro XS on it. So
only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
57, 58 with a full tank of gas and everything I own in it. And two people.
Aren't you supposed to break it in?
No, it's a demo. They already had it broken in. Mine's still being built, but I got to get the boat so I can have a boat to run for a month while the other one gets completed. You know, and we've talked about it before, but the pandemic is just, it makes life difficult for everybody trying to buy something and tournament anglers to try and get their boats for the season.
I have to believe you're not the only one having these issues.
No, absolutely not. No, but the important thing, and the reason I'm telling you I went fishing, was when you go out and you don't get any reports from anybody, literally you're going pre-fishing for the first time. You're just guessing at what to do. So I went out fishing with a very close friend of mine, we went out and fished bridge abutments. And I was using a Phelps floater. And then I tried the little technique we did up at Cabotogama. Crawler harness and a little green prop blade.
Yep.
And lo and behold, guess what? It worked.
Sure. And were you pulling it behind a bottom bouncer?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. Then the other one I had, because there was a mayfly hatch on, it's always Phelps floaters work really well with a half crawler when you got a mayfly hatch going. That's just the way it imitates an emerging mayfly.
Sure.
Well, caught a couple on that. Next day, went back out. Guess what? Nope. Put a leech on the Phelps floater. That was the one that was going. So it teaches you a lesson that you have to make sure that you are flexible. If you're saying that you're not going to switch your baits up, it's the spot that's not going. I think you make sure and think about what you're doing before you make that move. And are you exhausting opportunities?
So let me ask, when you hit the water, have you got minnows, crawlers, leeches, every live bait on board when you head out from the dock?
I usually will do leeches and crawlers. That's it. Minnows, it's early year. And I generally don't even use minnows because I'm going to run hair jigs or whatever. So that's kind of my
go-to.
Okay.
And if I need live bait, it's going to be a jig and a crawler, or a crawler slow death rig with the bend hook, which rolls the crawler.
Right.
It's going to be one of those scenarios that will do it.
I mean, I find myself, that's why, I mean, I use a lot of plastics, as you well know. And one of the reasons is, you know, if you're not going to hit the water several days in a row, stocking up on live bait, if you don't have a way to maintain them when you get off the water, you waste bait. And so I have more of a tendency to, you know, I'll maybe go with a box of crawlers, or maybe I'll go with some leeches if I can get them.
I'll have everything.
I'll have everything every time you go out.
3 dozen of each. Half. That's not like a given number, because either you're going to lose them if you're running a full crawler, or you're splitting half crawlers, and you can go, if you get into the fish, you can go through some serious amount of bait. And I will tell you, you can try to go plastic crawler versus a live crawler on a rig, but I've tried it. We tested it time and time again. A night crawler will always outproduce, and guys, you can call if you want. You can send us messages if you want. But a live crawler, when you're putting it in a crawler harness presentation, I've done it on Erie where the fish are on fire. They wouldn't touch the crawler, the artificial crawler. Sure. They would always, same color and everything, they would not touch that plastic crawler. Now, if it's on a jig where you're moving it and pulling it in a very erratic fashion, that's reaction, more reaction than it is following that bait. So big differences there. And that's really one of the things that really came to my mind as far as what to do, what not to do. And then, of course, making sure you have good, healthy crawlers is the other thing too.
Right.
Because it does make a difference. Yeah, it really does. So when it goes from catching, Don, then you got to do something with them when you catch them.
Well, one of two things. You can either put them back in the water or in the live well.
There is that, and I haven't had fresh walleye for a while.
Yeah?
And it came to mind that it's important, if you don't have a cast iron pan, get yourself two or three of them in various sizes. You never know how many guests you're going to have when you start telling people you're going to have fish. Cast iron is the most even heat. It's a flat pan. Tried cooking on a pan that had a dome in the center, and I cook a lot with olive oil. I pour the olive oil in the center, and it runs off to the side, so then you're laying the fish around the outside to make sure it's in that olive oil mix. And so cast iron is the most even heat. You don't get the burning that you would normally get. And, of course, it's even distribution of the oil or whatever you're going to cook with that fish. Blackening works great. All those pieces and parts caramelizing. Add some lemon to it, some onion, and then but cast iron is a must. And it just reiterated that fact this weekend because it came out so well. One, and that cast iron, you said, let's try it without. And it's still good walleye, but it didn't cook the same way. And it made it more difficult to fry it. So cast iron is an investment. You have it forever. And you don't worry about scratching the surface of it, because
it's very easy to care for if you do it properly from the beginning.
Absolutely. Well, stick around, you guys. We've got some fun stories coming up. Talk a little about a DNR land donation, as well as the thing I teased at the top of the hour. Really good pheasant hunting from Iowa. Let's see what it's all about. Stay tuned. More Valley Outdoors. As always, I'd like to make sure you guys check us out, Facebook, and where else, Don?
On thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Lots of fun stuff. And what else do we have to make sure people register for every day?
Well, you have an opportunity to fish with us, and the registrations are coming in on a daily basis. It's a lot of fun, and we're going to be going in September. So if you'd like to go fishing with us for 4 days, it's actually 5 days, 4 nights, so get registered. We'll be drawn here at the end of next month, and the folks will be able to go fishing with us.
Yeah, it's a good time. We talk about it every week because everybody likes something for free. Well, this is free.
Yeah.
All you have to do is go onto the site, click on it, register your name, and you can do it every single day, and it does increase your odds of winning.
Yeah, we had four individuals went with us last year. We had a blast. They learned a few things, I would think. We learned a lot. Food is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
If you don't mind steak.
Well, and Ashkenaz is such a great place. You pull your boat in. You don't have to worry about the wind.
Yeah, that's a beauty.
It's a nice little drive out, and it's not far from where they're fishing.
It's only about a mile out to the mouth, isn't it?
Yeah. Probably a mile and a half, two miles. Because it's really cool, though, when you come out the chute. You're coming through vertical walls that are probably, 200 feet high or 150 feet high?
Probably.
And it's only 40 feet wide, 50 feet, 50 feet,
yeah,
50, 60, because the one section where you come around the corner, she's a little snug. You can't drive two boats side by side in some parts of it, but just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And again, I spent so many years of my growing up fishing years on that body of water and just love it up there.
It's as close as you can get to Canada without actually going across the border.
Because part of it, if you walk on shore in the north end, you can actually hit Canada right there.
Well, you can see Canada from a lot of the places we're fishing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
Yep, pretty cool. Anyway, so a couple things. We talked a little bit briefly before the break. The DNR announced just recently that they received 729-acre land donation from the Trust for Public Land. What's not, when you say 729 acres, big deal, right? Okay, it's 729 acres. It's where the acreage is located, and in this case, it's a donated land stretching for 3 miles along the St. Croix River near Chisago City, and will be managed by the DNR as part of the Tchekwatana State Forest. That is cool.
Right. It's on the St. Croix River, mm-hmm. which is a beautiful river in Minnesota. Clear.
Yep. And what's nice about it, the goal was to make sure that they have a public land project, clean water, air, and high-quality habitat. Habitat's a big issue, as we all know. Pheasants live and die if you don't have the right habitats. And in this case, it's just nice to have that. XL Energy had owned the land for roughly a century, and the TPL led the effort purchasing it using a grant funded by the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Fund. And it's part of the Clean Water and Land Legacy Amendment passed in 2008 to increase sales tax by 0.375%. And that's protecting, enhancing, restoring wetlands, prairies, forests, fishing game, and wildlife. So really kind of cool. It's
really nice.
And having been up on the St. Croix last week, right up in that area by the boom site and then that kind of thing, it's gorgeous.
Yep.
And the fishing's pretty good too. So I'm not going to shake a stick at that, as the saying goes.
No, absolutely not.
So Don, pheasant hunting, near and dear to your heart?
Yes.
Yeah. I always like positivity. I mentioned it at the top of the hour. We talk a little bit about South Dakota. We always do. Iowa being one of the premier locations has struggled the last couple of years. It's trying to make it back with some populations of pheasant. From the Iowa DNR survey results, recent survey results confirmed what many hunters knew. Last fall, pheasant hunting was good. And in fact, it was the best in more than a decade.
Last fall.
Yep. So that's their best indication. They bagged about 375,000 roosters in 2021. That's the most since 2008.
Wow.
Which is pretty impressive. The small game survey reflected in general reports received during the season. The northern two-thirds of the state had really good hunting, said the upland wildlife research biologist with the Iowa DNR. We had a slight increase in the number of hunters, but 25% increase in the harvest, which means that the birds were there and the hunters did really well. And that's pretty respectable, I will have to say. Population typically shows increases following mild winters with springs that are drier and warmer than normal. There you go. Habitat. The weather was a model in predicting pheasant populations, and they are expecting that model to show stable and slightly increasing again for the fall of 2022 season, which is a good thing. And they expect quail and pheasant numbers in southern Iowa to rebound somewhat after a string of bad winters, ice, and spring floods. But the best pheasant density will again be in the northern and western regions, which is good for us.
Right.
Really works well. While the Nesting Outlook weather model offers a population prediction, the annual August roadside survey provides an actual count of pheasant, quail, rabbits, and partridge. Results from the annual August roadside survey will be posted on the Iowa DNR website, Pheasant Survey. And yeah, landowners, they also reach out. If they're interested in improving pheasant hunting on their land, they're encouraged to reach out to the staff of the Iowa DNR Private Lands Program, or by doing so, giving to the Farm Service Agency office to sign up for continuous CRP, which is absolutely a crazy successful program. No question about that, which it's good news.
Have you ever hunted Iowa?
Mm-hmm.
You have. I haven't. Well, maybe I have. I'm not sure I knew where the border was.
But you had your Iowa license, so it's all good.
Right.
So that's that. That is that. Where are we? Where's the line cut? It's like pheasant. I went pheasant quail hunting and pheasant hunting in Oklahoma. And the directions from the guy that we were hunting with, he said, okay, this is where I'll meet you guys over. Okay, go down to this sign, take a left. And then you're going to go down a ways, and then you take it right, and it's you'll see the quarter is this. There's a tree thing, this right there. Well, you'd think that's 4 or 5 miles. It was 22 miles.
Oh.
They have a little different perspective on distances.
Yeah, well, I was literally hunting on a gravel road that was the state line.
Gotcha.
And a bird got out of the Minnesota side of the ditch, and I shot it, and it landed in the Iowa side. So I'm not sure what that means.
They wanted to go home.
Right. Oh, I have done my rabbit survey. We have two.
Oh.
In my backyard. That's
perfect. Yeah. Okay, we got that for Red Wing. It's up from one from last year, so
yep.
It's probably more like up from 18. All right, we're going to be back with more Valley Outdoors right after this. Ashkenam Resort on Ash River in northern Minnesota is a destination you're looking for. Ashkenam offers everything for the angler or family vacation with access to Lake Cabotogama, Namekin Lake, and the gateway to Voyageurs National Park. Thousands of acres of clean, refreshing water all available to you. This is your destination for your next fishing trip or family vacation. Check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. Do I need to say walleyes, northern pike, and crappies?
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together we can make a difference.
Well, Don, I'm glad you gave us that rabbit count.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, they're doing well. Yeah.
You should come to my backyard.
Yeah. You got more?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. You have my garden?
Well, no, but my neighbor and us have our shed, right? Well, both sheds house baby bunnies every season.
Oh, sure.
So I don't know how I would keep track.
My shed houses red squirrels, which will soon no longer house red squirrels. It may house.
They're so cute, but they're terrible.
It may house some former. Past tense, red squirrels. It's time.
Well, you know, the deer
it's
are...
It's time.
The deer need to go. Are abundant, too. I had one in the backyard the other day, and he kind of snuck around the side of the house, and And I asked the neighbor, I says, did you see the deer in the back? I said, he was lunching on your flowers in the flower bed, but I couldn't see what he was up to around the corner where his garden is. And he goes, I imagine that's where all the beets went.
Oh, no.
They hit him right down to the ground. So now they have netting over the top.
Deer are a pest, a nuisance in Red Wing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people are not fans.
No.
We live with them.
Yeah, we do. We do. One thing we do not want to live with, though, Don,
what's that?
Is the invasive carp scenario.
Right.
And obviously there have been a million different thoughts on how to deter, because it's not a matter of eliminating them. I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion. They can't eliminate, but they're trying to at least mitigate and stop the movement. A lot of things going on. So they recently had done a test, and they put a tracking beacon on a invasive silver carp. And swimming from La Crosse to Winona, this speedy silver carp got through all the swift current of the Mississippi River when it was over its banks, went 35 miles from La Crosse to Winona, and when they saw how that quickly that occurred, now it has them in a panic mode, and they at this point are saying they need to have a battle line drawn just above Lock and Dam 5. It's about 10 miles northwest of Winona. And the plan could cost as much as $16.5 million. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources tagged that rogue fish, which took advantage of high water loophole last month to slip the bonds of the lock and dams as the spillways opened. The DNR released a report in the environmental groups last week that showed the fish navigated 35 miles upriver against strong current, and it was done. How long do you think it took them?
Oh, it could take a few days, though.
Less than a day.
Did they go over a dam, too?
No. Remember when the water was high? Yep. They had the spillways open. So it went right through the roller dams scenario.
So it went over the rollers.
Or when they lifted the rollers.
It went past an existing dam.
It went, when they open them up,
yep.
The water's free to flow.
Yep.
And the water's stabilized. They'll swim right through.
Sure.
And that is the farthest north the tagged silver carp has made it in the Mississippi River, although some silvers and other invasive carp have been caught upstream. The DNR invasive consultant, they told Minneapolis Star Tribune, the particular carp's northward progress definitely adds urgency to the need to block the fish. And that was the University of Minnesota professor Pete Sorensen also had agreed with that. It's a day of reckoning is what they're bringing that to. The Stop Carp Coalition raised concern in 2020 when a commercial contractor netted 51 silver and grass carp in the Mississippi River near La Crosse. And sounding the alarm is what is needing to happen, and it's time to move forward with a program to eliminate those open areas that they can fly through, or at least put a barrier up that they can do. And then bubbles have done a lot, and sound has done a lot because they don't like sound. Commercial fishermen caught increasing numbers of Asian carp in recent years, and it is concerning, of course. And anytime you have invasives move in, we need to get those taken care of and move them out. So what do you say other than...
Do you know if they've gotten up like the Illinois River and into Michigan?
Yep, not Michigan.
They haven't gotten into Lake Michigan yet.
No. They say Lock and Dam 5 is the most likely place to halt migration because there isn't a large spillway that would allow the carp to swim around the structure. So they're using a narrowing and trying to keep that to a minimum as far as that goes. And they also had a combo. We talked about this, bubbles, and they also noise. They call it a bioacoustic fish fence, and that would span the lock pool to make the carp retreat. And obviously there's a bunch of different plans that are in the works with that, but they would expect that it's going to cost somewhere between $8 and $16 million to make that happen.
Wow.
I know, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, and you can't predict heavy floods, so when there's, you know, high water, I don't know how you prevent that.
I don't either.
I mean, it's hard to deal with Mother Nature.
Yeah, It is. It is. So real quick, Don,
yep.
I've been wanting to tell this story once you get back. Ava and I held off the story, but real quick, we're going to go this. The top 10 most overrated cartridges. I want your yay or nay with the statement. The 17 caliber. Yay or nay?
I would say yay.
Yeah, they don't like them. They call it a what? There's a Wildcat, 17 O'Brien, Mach 4, and they just didn't like it. They said it's a super minuscule bullet. Hypervelocity will have some entertaining values, but for whatever is being shot, it does not, because obviously it destroys. The bullet explodes when it hits. So, not good. The 9mm Parabellum.
Not familiar with that one.
Yeah. It's not. It's been used in several different self-defense rounds. The 9mm has been around since 1902. Most widely used handgun cartridge in the world. And police departments like it because the ammo is cheap. Kicks very little. On the other hand, with ball ammo, it's marginal. How about most short magnums, Don? Yay or nay?
Nay.
Yeah, I agree. 7mm Remington Magnum. I say that's... I had that round. And I didn't see anything wrong with it. I like that. It was a good long-range deer gun.
I mean, I have a 300 Winchester short mag. It packs a lot of power.
And the last one we're going to shoot for the day, this is the top five, 10mm auto.
Yay.
And he gives it a yay for the end. Well, that's going to wrap our show for today, guys. Thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. For Don, Ava, and myself, Eric, we are out. Join us next week. We're going to have some fun. Have a great week. See ya.